welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. This week, as always, I'm joined by Stefan Chin.
Hello, I'm here.
What's your favorite flavor of Pop-Tart?
Frosted strawberry.
I don't think anybody could go over a frosted strawberry Pop-Tart.
That's like the most like neutral
them,
one.
I like them unfrosted. I like the regular strawberry Pop-Tart.
That's so weird.
I feel like somebody just poured a bunch of Mountain Dew all over a pastry.
That is an old person Pop-Tart. Yeah. Like, I want less frosting.
Yeah.
You eat a bowl of oatmeal or something.
You eat grape nuts?
I do
shredded
sometimes.
Wheat without the frosting.
Yeah, that's very boomer.
That shouldn't exist anymore.
It's the year 2020. We have the technology. Yeah. We can put sugar on it.
And we're all babies now, so we need it.
Stefan, what's your tagline?
Mambo number 5.
Oh, gosh. That's going to be stuck in there. Sam Schultz is also here with us. Sam, what's your tagline?
Leather pants.
Sari Riley, hello.
Hello.
What's your tagline?
Oh, no.
And I'm Hank Green, and my tagline is, she won't be coming around the mountain.
Hank, what's the best cloud you've ever seen?
Ooh.
It's a great Hank Green question. Uh-huh. I did once see a cloud coming off of the top. At the pass in Glacier National Park, at Logan Pass. And the cloud was like hanging there. But then as it fell off the edge of the pass, it disappeared. And so it just sort of like was constantly water falling off the edge.
Ooh,
it was really neat.
It's a hell of a cloud.
Thanks for asking. Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We're playing for glory, but we're also keeping score and awarding Sam bucks from week to week. We do everything we can to stay on topic, but we're not great at that. So if you go on a tangent and people deem it unworthy, we can dock you a Hank buck. And now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Stefan. I'm loving it.
Notes, chords, ratios, organized across time in a staff in rows. Play it, sing it, if you've got a bell, ring it. That's right, this poem is musical. Music is felt universally, whether produced by voice or drums or strings. But does a chimpanzee understand harmony or feel the rhythmic complexity? How can it be that a bunch of vibrating molecules makes me feel this way inside? Don't ask too many questions, my dude. There's only so much we can learn with MRI. Whether you're at work, whether you're at home, whether you're at a party, or if you are alone, every time is a good time to hear a musical collection of notes. Unless you're Sari.
Wow.
It was everything.
I was delighted and then offended.
Wow. So our topic of the week is music. Thank you, Stefan, for sharing with the class.
And he gets an extra buck, I believe.
Yeah, I better get two bucks for this one. Yeah.
It is an extra buck to do it musically. So now we're going to try and do our best to define music.
Uh-huh.
Just give me like 10 words max.
Making sounds with the goal of making people feel something.
Oh my God.
You said that in the least musical way possible.
Hey, Joe, we've come for Sari enough.
Wouldn't that include any conversation in music or like clap, like trying to scare somebody? Like, boo? Is boo music?
I don't know.
According to you,
music?
It is.
Yeah, could be.
I feel like there's a time component. Like, it's how sounds play out over time.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, like, in like Western music, you're following like rules and principles of music theory. And so, like, there's notes that suggest the key, and there's specific like patterns within the rhythm and the notes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
We should say that Stefan knows things about music.
You know, a couple things about music.
I hadn't really thought about it, but if like time didn't exist, music also could not exist. All the notes would happen at the same time, and that would not be pretty.
Yeah. Oh.
You really would have. You'd be much more limited in the ones you could play.
Although that feels like that's somewhat conditioned. Like if we were just used to hearing all the notes at once, and that was the only thing we knew.
Oh man!
And there's no time, so like, what are we anyways? I don't know.
That's true.
That's a great question.
I definitely don't know the answer to that question, but I do like the idea that there is no music without time.
Does music have some sort of pattern that conversation doesn't? Like pattern in the sounds that are made. What is music?
Turn it
is
on.
Is this music?
Stefan.
So if you record like the sound of a river, like that's not music.
Mm. Yeah.
But there could be like patterns in the waves
or like birds chirping or like mosquitoes buzzing in a particular pattern.
Is bird singing music? I feel like it can
be. It's like it's starting to get musical and like there's a blurry line there where at some point you've now crossed the line into music. Huh. I think there's maybe like a cultural component to it.
Sure. That's the great thing about ones like music where it's like, well, ultimately everyone knows we're not going to get this one right.
But there's also a lot of science.
And it's a lot of math too. Mm-hmm. Like the
ratios.
You know, both the ratios in terms of the notes, but also, you know, time signatures and rhythm. Because I think that rhythm is a big, is obviously sort of...
Oh, I'm not going to... I guess I can't say that rhythm is necessary to music, but it's necessary for my personal enjoyment of music.
I mean, the thing is, like, none of the individual things, because there's atonal music, too.
Right.
That, like, each of the things that we are including in the definition, you can make music that doesn't have those things. Right. But
is there a etymology of music?
Oh, I didn't look that up because I was just tuned out for this whole episode.
I imagine it's from the muse, the Greek muses. Shoot.
Art of the muses.
Oh, the art of the muses.
In classical Greece, any art in which the muses presided, but especially music with lyrical poetry.
Any art. So just a sculpture is music.
Yes.
Well, Sarah, you didn't tell me that.
Because if I had walked into this room and been like, that sculpture right there of the thinker that's on the wall behind us, that's music.
We would have told you to get out of here.
Everyone would have laughed at me. Yeah.
You really don't know what music is.
Oh, is that why you don't listen to the radio? You think it's sculpture?
Yeah, you look at a little sculpture on your dashboard.
And now it's time for... One of our panelists has prepared three science facts for the rest of us to enjoy and be educated by, but only one of those facts is real. The other ones are lies, and we have to figure out either by deduction or wild guess which is the true fact. Sam, it's your turn.
I appreciate you moving on, but I feel profoundly unsatisfied by whatever that definition was. In movies, inspirational music swells when the hero is about to best their foe, score a game-winning goal, etc. But does this movie logic apply to the real world? Could you listen to rousing, inspirational music and suddenly start doing whatever you're doing even better? In certain situations, yes. So which of these is one of those situations?
In one situation, but not two.
Number one, listening to music while doing creative work like writing or visual art significantly increases your creativity. Number two, listening to music while driving makes you focus less on small distractions, therefore less likely to make mistakes.
Mm.
Or number three, listening to music while playing sports helps you score more points.
Does it matter at all what kind of music it is?
I feel like I've seen research that has talked about listening to like more aggressive styles of music makes people drive faster.
Definitely.
I've also seen research that says that people who are driving faster tend to make less mistakes because they're paying more attention than people who are driving really slow.
Right, but the mistakes they make are more catastrophic.
Yes.
I did say rousing inspirational music.
Rousing inspirational music. Yeah. Well, that does sound like it's about art then. Mm. I know personally that I cannot write and listen to music at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I can draw and listen to music at the same time.
Huh.
But like the conflict of words with other words.
So even instrumental music, though?
I don't know.
Mm. Yes, to me. If I try to listen to instrumental music while reading or writing, my brain goes, too much.
Too much.
I cannot handle this. Yeah, I can listen to like the Hackers soundtrack while I write emails, and I feel like it makes me super productive.
Yeah.
Just blast the music, and I'm just like, I want to do all these emails.
Do you consider...
What?
Is that creative work?
Well, emails can be creative work.
Yeah.
But usually if I'm resorting to the Hackers soundtrack, it means that I need to write a lot of emails. And so my emails are going to be of low quality, but they're going to at least be sent.
Okay.
I don't really have strong opinions about this.
Because you hate music.
Yeah.
So.
I don't hate music. In high school art class, my art teacher would sometimes let people play music on their headphones, sometimes not. Like people grumbled when you couldn't.
Uh-huh.
So maybe
would you get
it's
pissed
creative.
At them when they were listening to music?
Yeah.
No, I would just listen, do my art in silence. The sports thing makes sense because in college, my dorm room was near the tennis courts and they always played music during the practice. That was how I stayed up to date with the current music trends is what came from the tennis court.
Okay. Stefan, any thoughts as a music expert, man?
I feel driven by music. Mm-hmm. And so like, I feel like I'm more creative when I'm listening to music. Obviously, if I'm writing music, it's harder to listen to music while you're doing that.
That makes it hard. Yep.
But I always have music playing while I'm driving. But I don't know if that affects my focus. It's just like, I need that stimulation. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Alone with my thoughts, which I don't want to be. I'm going to go with driving because I think that that seems real to me. I think that we can sort of like get sort of sucked in if we don't have something to pull us out a little bit.
I'm going to say sports because even though it sounds cliche, it makes sense. I don't know. I listen to music when I run because I get bored. So
wow, Sari, listening to music.
What are you listening to?
I don't know. It's like what Nicole told me to listen to. Okay. And then also musical soundtracks that I just put on rotation. But
cats.
I like.
Do you listen to Cats?
I don't listen to Cats. I hate Cats. I like put on a bunch of things and then I took out anything that felt too slow that I started thinking about how much pain my body was in.
Like memories from Cats.
Yeah, memories very from slow. Cats.
I like Cats.
Well, this is fortunate because I was leaning towards the creativity one. So I'm going to go with that one and we'll spread it out.
Oh, y'all did a different
one. Oh, wow. It's all the way around.
Huh, okay. The answer is sports.
Ah, I thought was I was right.
Music expert over here.
Yeah.
So with creative work, in a 2019 study, researchers in Sweden presented college students with word puzzles that required creative thinking to solve. The students that solved the puzzle in a library did way better than students who solved it while listening to any type of music, including music that they knew really well and just instrumental music. Hmm. I think they did the worst listening to music that they'd never heard before with lyrics.
This is a bad sign for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're I'm doing my worst. Back.
So anecdotally, there's this animator, Richard Williams, who was in charge of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Mm-hmm. And he has this book called The Animator's Survival Kit. And there's a very like infamous page where he has a cartoon of him screaming at somebody who's listening to music while they're drawing, saying that nobody is smart enough to think of two things at one time. So a lot of animators are like, that's bullshit, but he probably is right. I know I have to pause music a lot when I'm like, when I really have to work on something, I have to like pause it and think really hard about it. With driving, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of people saying that they quote, can't see while they drive if music is too loud. And this is something that happens to me all the time. Like if I'm trying to park, I have to turn my music off because I like can't think straight. So in 2007, a study using simulated driving tests and other reflex tests showed that listening to loud like rock music in your car can decrease your reaction time by 20%.
Oh.
So be careful, Stefan.
20% is a lot.
That is
a
yeah. Yeah.
And there's evidence also that if you're listening to music, you know that that's more distracting than listening to music you don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So like a driving playlist where you're singing along.
Oh, yeah.
You make more mistakes driving.
But you don't fall asleep, which is really what I'm going for. Yeah,
that's the biggest mistake that you can make. So that's probably okay. Yeah. And then with the sports one, in 2018, there was a study where participants were shooting basketballs from distances that they got to choose. Mm-hmm. So the study found that participants who had, and these were people who had all kinds of sports experience. So people with low self-esteem with sports who were already performing poorly at the task did not improve when they were listening to music. But people who were good at sports, who listened to music of their choosing, usually like really peppy music, took bigger chances, like stood farther away and did significantly better shooting. Mm. So if you're good at sports already, listening to exciting music will make you better at sports. But if you are sad about sports already, it will not help at all.
I like the difference between being bad at sports and just being sad at sports.
That's kind of what the study made it sound like. It was like people who self-rated themselves as bad at sports never got better at it, no matter what. So maybe if they believed in themselves a little
bit
more.
That's a lesson for life.
It really is. Right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we're going to take a short break and then the fact off. Welcome back, everybody. Sam Buck total. Stefan's got two because of your song. Sam's got two because you just rocked it in the truth or fail. And Sarah's got one because she got that good old music question right. And I got nothing, by the way. So it's my chance now to come back for you and attempt to get some points here in the Fact Off. where two panelists have brought science facts to present to the others in an attempt to blow their minds, and you get to assign your Sam Buck to the fact you like the most. We're going to decide who goes first. I can't look at this.
Ah, yes.
So the question is, in the 20-teens, the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester, England, used an online test called Hooked on Music to ask about 12,000 participants to identify the catchiest, most quickly recognizable song. Mm-hmm. These are the five catchiest. But which of these songs was scientifically deemed the catchiest? Is it Eye of the Tiger by Survivor? Wannabe by Spice Girls?
It's Wannabe by Spice Girls.
Is it SOS by ABBA? Mambo Number 5, ooh, my tagline, by Lou Bega? Or Just Dance by Lady Gaga?
And whoever's closest to number one with their guess gets to choose. Yeah.
I went with Wannabe by Spice Girls. I am not changing my guess because that's the right answer.
I want Sari to sing a bar of each of these songs.
I only know three of the five. I don't know what the...
Oh, that's good.
I don't know what three and four are.
That's like a natural 50-50.
Yeah.
You would only know catchiest songs.
That's right.
Oh, you're right. Okay, then Eye of the Tiger, because I felt like I knew that from the youngest age.
The most quickly recognizable song is Wannabe.
Yeah,
the Spice
so,
Girls.
Like, yeah, you know, like, I know exactly what's about to happen.
Number two was Mambo Number 5, and then Eye of the Tiger.
Mm. Oh, wow. I would have thought Eye of the Tiger was second, because it's like... Dun, dun,
dun. Yeah, that's the thing.
Is the first line of Mambo Number 5 him saying Mambo Number 5, though? That might be...
All right, you guys. I'm going to go first. Do you want to know about the highest note that has ever been played on a musical instrument?
On an instrument?
Well, it was played by a laser on a guitar that is smaller than a red blood cell.
The guitar is.
They made a nano guitar out of crystalline silicon that was 10 microns long. Its length is significantly thinner than a human hair. They first made a nano guitar in 1997, but it didn't have strings that were playable. Mm. And they created a second model in 2003 that had strings. And instead of getting a very small man to play it, they can shoot a laser at it. Uh-huh. And that laser can then, by the way that the laser light gets reflected back, you can see how fast the string is vibrating. And it's vibrating 130,000 times higher than the sound of a full-scale guitar. So it's 133,000 times higher. Higher pitched than a guitar.
Jeez. And the laser is plucking the string?
It just shoots it, and the string then vibrates. It hits it with some photons.
It's like some atomic excitation.
Exactly. Yeah.
What? Does it look like a very, very tiny guitar?
Yes. It looks like a very, very tiny guitar.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty metal.
Yeah. If you saw it, you would say, that's a guitar.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually look like it has a bridge. It looks like the crystalline silicon strings are actually what sort of holds the neck together. But if you're wondering why they did it, it's basically because they could. So the scientists said that sometimes nanotechnology has a bit of a negative feel toward it, and they want to make it not scary to people. And so sometimes they like to try and make cute things with nanotechnology.
So there's no application for this?
None. Well, they think that there may be some applications, and they're like, oh, this is interesting. Maybe we could use it for this over here. But, like, honestly, they made a tiny guitar.
Yeah.
My tardigrade needs a guitar.
That's right. That's right. I think this would be too small even for a tardigrade.
Yeah, if it's, like, red blood cell size. You could give it to, like, a virus or something.
Yeah.
Viruses are tiny. Way too small for this.
Oh
no. Well, what can have it then?
Yeah, blood cells.
Okay.
Good old
human cells.
They don't have
arms, though. Tardigrades need them. They're the only ones with arms.
Yeah, tardigrades don't anthropomorphize ourselves. Please. I can't imagine my
blood. You ever seen a little movie called Osmosis Jones? Doesn't sound like you have. If you make a small guitar, but you can't play the strings, is it really a guitar?
Exactly. No. It's just a picture of a guitar.
Yeah.
But if it makes noise, even if that noise is undetectable, it's a guitar. Now, it's tuned.
It's not. It's undetectable by ears. It's still detectable, right?
It's detectable, yes.
Because I feel like if it's undetectable by anything, then that's not a noise anymore.
It's detectable by lasers.
When they're making teeny stuff like this, are they 3D printing? What are they doing?
You know, I don't know how they make these tiny silicon crystals.
Okay. What note does it play? Do they know?
That is a great question. I wanted to figure out what note the strings played, but I was not able to.
I'm not convinced that they know based on how they reported the number.
You could totally figure it out. I think that this article doesn't have the number because it's like about 130,000 times higher. But like if you were measuring it with a laser, you could actually tell what the frequency was. Yeah. And then from that, you could be like, this is a C sharp, you know, 45 octaves higher than middle C or whatever.
I don't know and understand anything about music at all.
Good thing we're
I don't know what an octave is. I don't know what
So on that front, like if you play middle C, that's 440 hertz in our musical system. And so then if you go up an octave, you're doubling the frequency.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is why they sort of sound related. They sound like the same note. Because every time you go up an octave, you're just doubling that frequency. Uh-huh. And so if you know the exact frequency. Yeah. So the distance between each octave is in terms of absolute numbers, it grows over time.
Is that how they knew that the black hole was making the noise of a certain note or something? Mm-hmm. That
if you figure out the frequency, you can just do some quick math based on notes that we use and have a tuning for, and then say, oh, it's a B.
All right, whose turn is it?
Mine. So synthetic music and synthesizing electronic music is where it gets really physicsy and brain bendy for me, even more so than just normal instruments. But humans figured it out way earlier than I expected. An inventor named Thaddeus Cahill patented the art of an apparatus for generating and distributing music electrically, a device he called the telharmonium, in 1897.
Ooh.
So that was when mass music media like radio or CDs didn't really exist. And basically, he wanted the telharmonium to be a scientific synthesizer of any instrument or orchestra or whatever he wanted that transmitted sounds over phone lines to any home or hotel or restaurant on demand to people who subscribed to his system. Although you'd need an amplified phone receiver to hear it. And in one article, they said you could tuck it away in foliage or flowers, like a hidden speaker. In 1901, he had a working prototype where two performers would sit at keyboards, essentially, which would trigger tone wheels, which was like the big invention of his thing, which were, to my understanding, cylinders with different widths, like variable widths along them, that spun in a magnetic field. And because of the bumps, some of them were closer to the magnet, some of them were farther from the magnet, and that generated an alternating electric current and produced the sine waves that created the musical tones. And so his model that he presented publicly in 1906 weighed over 200 tons, measured over 60 feet long, and required 2,000 switches, which I think are the keys, and included 145 separate tone wheels. And cost about $200,000 to build, which is about $5.5 million today. So it was this huge machine, and it was new and flashy, and the first time it broadcast in a restaurant was full of surprise and delight. But the New York Telephone Company noticed, or started getting complaints, because this music machine was interfering with normal telephone conversations across the telephone lines. Like, it generated so much electrical power. So they stopped providing cables, and this inventor was left without cables for his device, which meant no sounds were being transmitted, which meant no one could subscribe to it.
He got deplatformed.
Yeah. And so his business tanked.
Was there radio? There was radio.
No.
Was there radio? There wasn't radio?
There was radio existing, but it wasn't like popularized. Like, we had learned about radio waves.
Yeah.
And so this basically left a void for wireless transmissions instead of wired transmissions. Right.
Was the interference music? Were they like hearing music on the line?
I think so.
Because in that case, that's awesome. Yeah. You shouldn't complain. Yeah. You're getting free
music.
Nice. You didn't have to subscribe.
There is a person in a room playing music for you. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy it. But the people instead were like, ghosts, definitely ghosts.
You're interrupting my conversation. I'm having neighborhood gossip sesh.
Is there any record of what it sounded like?
No, there are no recordings because after his business tanked, his brother tried to preserve one of the instruments, but they could not find anyone to protect it. And so they just scrapped it for the metal because there was so much. So no recordings of it. And the three versions of it that was built have been lost to time. And so we have no idea what it sounded like.
Oh my God. He was so far ahead of his time. He was streaming.
Did they call you? Did you have to answer the phone or did it just show up?
I think you had to have cables run to your house.
Oh, okay.
Like a phone line.
It's like a separate line.
But you could just pick it up and there would always be music playing, I think.
To be being played live.
Yes. Yeah. So the two people had to be sitting at this keyboard playing, but they could simulate any sort of violin or trumpet or whatever with this one machine.
It's so freaking weird. I just feel like if he came forward in time, we would show him Spotify and he'd be like, I knew it.
Yeah,
I was on to something. Yeah.
He's listening to it and he's like, what do their wheels look like?
Where are the cables? Search the foliage.
How do your wheels this good? Well, good facts, me and Sari. I'm going to give you guys a countdown. And you're going to tell me which fact you like the best.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Sari.
Yeah, I figured. That was a really good fact.
They're both really good, though. Yeah. But the first streaming service.
I know. The first streaming service is like a 8-ton machine.
Yeah.
Is really good. And I'm like, mine's very small.
Small is great. I love small. Okay. But
it was both guys doing things because they thought it would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With music, so that's...
Yeah, but I feel like one of them worked harder. Now it's time for Ask the Science Couch, where we ask a listener question to our couch of finely honed scientific minds. This question comes from @PattyShag and @PenPaperPlanner. What causes timbre in instruments? Why does a guitar sound like a guitar and a piano like a piano, etc.? So, like, there's a clean, pure note that's 440 hertz, is that right?
Yeah.
And that's like, boo! It sounds like that. But that's not what guitars sound like. That's not what flutes sound like. They all sound different. They all play the same note, but they all sound different. Mm-hmm. So you have these like quality to the note that is not just the note, and that's the timbre.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
Timbre.
Yeah.
Yes, it's timbre.
Timbre. It's also timbre. I just think you can't use such a banal word to describe this quality of sound. You need something that sounds fancy. Timbre.
Yeah, timbre is better than timber, which is just wood.
But yeah, so you have the fundamental frequency, but there's also like, usually you have a series of like higher frequencies that are related to the fundamental frequencies that are also produced.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get like the octave at 880, and then there's like... I wrote them down like 1320 and 1760, and they're related to 440 by specific ratios. And like normally that lowest frequency is the loudest, and then as you go up, they get quieter. Hmm. And then the way that they resonate within like the body of the acoustic guitar or within your throat or within the piano body, like it emphasizes or de-emphasizes like some of those frequencies differently. And so you get like a unique frequency spectrum, even for the same note between different instruments. But something I learned about timbre for this is that there's also other contextual clues. It's not just like the frequencies that you're hearing. When you pluck a guitar, there's a sharp transient where it's very loud at first when you pluck it, and then it gets quieter in a very, like there's a signature pattern to how the volume changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like your voice, you can modulate in all kinds of different ways, but you can't really reproduce the same kind of volume envelope that you would get from plucking a guitar string.
Right.
And so we learn to recognize different instruments using all these different clues.
So does everyone's voice have a different timbre?
Mm-hmm.
That's
like how you recognize voices, is because our voices have these unique signatures. Huh.
If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter @SciShowTangents, where we'll tweet out upcoming topics for episodes every week. Thank you to @PartlyHarmless, @DGGelman, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this episode. Sam Buck final scores. I come in with a whopping 0 points. Sam and Stefan tied for second with 2, and Sari coming out on top.
I won the music episode.
Yeah.
Wow. Give me a Grammy. Is that the right one?
Yeah, good job.
I had to go through the other 3 and be like, that's not the music one.
If you like the show and you want to help us out, it's easy to do that. You can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show. Also, we look at our iTunes reviews for topic ideas for future episodes. Second, you can tweet out your favorite moment from this episode. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
tell people about us.
Thank you for joining. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Stefan Chin.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the wonderful team at WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. The brown note is a supposed frequency in the infrasonic range, somewhere below 20 hertz.
Oh my God.
That makes people poop when they hear it.
What?
But it's never been proven. Oh. And we actually think it's the myth started in a New Scientist fake article from December 26th, 1974, about a fake instrument called the colophone. And they said in this quote, however, as soon as the first notes crashed out, the audience showed signs of discomfort, which gave rise to panic before a verse of the anthem was complete. Moreover, the evident mass psychological disturbance was accompanied by unpleasant physiological symptoms, pain, diuresis, and diarrhea. And like after this article was published, where it was like, it caused people to shit themselves and pee and whatever, the brown note idea kind of took on a life of its own, but it's never been...
But that article was fake.
Yes, it was a lie.
Was it a lie on purpose? Was it like April Fool's?
I think so. It was December, so I don't know why it was a fake article. But yeah.
Back in the 70s, April Fool's was during December.
Because of the leap year, it moved back. What is diuresis, peeing yourself?
Yeah.
My bonus fact is that trombones used to be called sack butts.